So let's start with a few minutes of sitting together. Becoming aware of the body. And the areas where the body touches the ground. Taking a few deeper breaths and letting the body and the mind relax with each exhalation. Letting the face relax and the shoulders relax as well. Letting the breath find its natural rhythm, do its own thing. Breathe by itself. Being aware of the anchor. And the wider field of experience. Allowing the experience to be just as it is. So on this retreat, you have been doing quite a few sessions of formal meditation this far. And when you sit down to meditate, when you settle into your meditation posture, it might be a good idea to check your attitude towards practice. What is the attitude towards practice? Why am I doing this? Like, do you sit down to meditate in order to accomplish something or to reach some goal? Like, have less stress in your life in the future, more peaceful mind or better concentration? Or do you have this image of maybe going to work out at the mind gym to develop some mind muscles? Do you have a project of some sort? Or would you really like to have some nice insights, like experience some not self or get the stream entry? Or would you perhaps like to become a better person, somebody who's a little less reactive and a little more loving than the one who's sitting here? Or did you perhaps join the retreat out of curiosity, see what it's going to be like, and you're doing the sittings because they are in the schedule, because the teachers tell you that the sittings are important, so you're doing it because they tell you to do them? Or have you perhaps heard from a friend how meditation has helped them in some way, and you would be interested in getting that benefit too? So we all have our reasons for being interested in meditation and wanting to do meditation and being on this retreat. Many different reasons, and many of those reasons might be some variation of wanting more well-being in one's life and wanting less suffering in one's life. And that can be a very wholesome motivation to practice, very wholesome wish to have that. But it's also really important to be aware of one's attitude towards practice, because that attitude might in some cases actually get in the way without us even being aware of what's going on. So as an example, quite a few years ago, I was on a retreat practicing walking meditation. I was doing my walking meditation, walking slowly back and forth and trying to be mindful of the sensations in the leg, really trying to be mindful of the sensations of the legs. But all of a sudden, I noticed something that I hadn't noticed before. I noticed that, wow, what's happening here is that I'm trying really hard to be present in this moment. But I want to be present because I've heard that being present is a good thing and a useful thing. And I have the belief that if I do this walking meditation practice, my life is going to be better and nicer at some point later on. And all this, instead of actually being very interested in being present. I wasn't very interested in being present. I wasn't very interested in that moment. So my walking meditation at that time was mostly just, you know, carrying out the practice instructions kind of mechanically trying to be present in order to reach some future goal, in order to reach some future benefit. So do you see that difference here? You know, I wasn't interested in being present in the moment. I was just interested in working towards some future goal, and trying to be mindful was just serving that purpose instead of being an end to itself. And there's quite a big problem here, actually. So if we remember that the present moment, this very moment here, is the only moment we are ever gonna get to experience. So in the future, there's gonna be just another moment, just like this. Another moment just like this in the future. So if we are not able to be present and satisfied now, but instead we are cultivating greed and we are cultivating aversion, it's not so likely that we are gonna be able to be present and satisfied in the future moment either. If we are even gonna be alive in that future moment, that is uncertain too. So let me illustrate this a bit more with another example. And I have a quotation from Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a well-known Zen teacher from Vietnam, who's the founder of Plum Village in France. And this quotation is from his book, The Miracle of Mindfulness. So he's writing, "If while washing dishes, we think only of the cup of tea that awaits us, thus hurrying to get the dishes out of the way as if they were a nuisance, then we are not washing the dishes to wash the dishes. What's more, we are not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. In fact, we are completely incapable of realizing the miracle of life while standing at the sink. If we can't wash the dishes, the chances are we won't be able to drink our tea either. While drinking the cup of tea, we will only be thinking of other things, barely aware of the cup in our hands. Thus, we are sucked away into the future, and we are incapable of actually living 1 minute of life." So in this example, what's happening is that we are washing the dishes and experiencing aversion to what's happening, with aversion to our experience, and with greed towards getting the cup of tea. So in effect, in that moment, we are actually cultivating greed and aversion and restlessness. And when we finally get to the tea break moment of our life, we are likely to feel greed and aversion and restlessness in that moment too, because that's kind of what we have been cultivating. But if, while washing the dishes, if we had been cultivating mindfulness and acceptance and contentment, we'd be more likely to experience these qualities of mind when we had our tea. So here we have a great illustration of the very core teaching of the Buddha, the teaching that Greg talked about yesterday, and the teaching that the Buddha talked about in the Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha taught that the root cause of all unnecessary suffering and dissatisfaction and distress are these three root defilements or root kilesas: greed, aversion, and delusion. And in Finnish, they are ahneus, aversio, ja harhaluula. So in this dishwashing example, we have aversion. You know, we don't want to be washing the dishes. We don't want to be experiencing this. And we have greed. We would like to be drinking tea. And we also have delusion. You know, probably subconsciously we believe that we are going to be happier when we get to that teacup, that it's maybe not really possible to be happy and content in this dishwashing moment. and that the teacup needs to happen for us to feel better. We believe that happiness awaits us in the future, and we just need to get to that future moment to feel better. So believing all this not so true, an example of delusion. But I just want to stress that it's really natural that greed and aversion arise in the mind, you know. It's probably happened to all of us at one point or another that we are washing the dishes and not really want to be doing that, but wishing that it was over already. I know that it has happened to me countless times in my life. But you know, it's not a problem in itself. You know, the key here is, first of all, mindfulness, to recognize that there is aversion and greed happening, and not identify with them, not kind of believe their message, not believe what they are telling us, and then to let them be there, to accept them, to allow them, so not struggling them, not making them into a problem, not taking the situation as a problem. And if we are able to do that, we are actually cultivating mindfulness and acceptance and contentment in that dishwashing moment, even with the greed and aversion there, which will make them more likely to appear in the future too. So it's very important to become aware of these forces in one's mind, these root kilesas. And let's just try this for a moment. So maybe you'd like to close your eyes for just a moment. Again, feeling the body and the body touching the ground. And just dropping in a question and seeing what happens, seeing if an answer comes up by itself. Dropping in a question: do I want to get rid of something? If you do, that might be aversion there. And again, just becoming aware of the body. Getting ready to drop in another question and just seeing what arises as a result. Now dropping in another question. Do I want something more in my experience? And if you do, it might be the case of greed. Then you're already opening the eyes. So what I have been talking about, you know, greed and aversion and delusion, it might sound very simple and obvious, and it might be very easy to understand this intellectually, but for some reason, no matter how simple this sounds, these forces run so deep that they can still really run our lives to a large part. And also that delusion that's so prevalent that if we just get something more, we are going to be satisfied or happy, or if not fully satisfied or happy, at least satisfied enough or happy enough somehow, more than now. I was recently reading a book by Martha Beck. She's not a meditation teacher, but she is a self-help author and a life coach. And her, I really appreciate her work. And her recent book is called The Way of Integrity. And she is also talking about greed in this book and tells this example that I really liked. So one of her clients is this hardworking author. And the author once told Martha in one of their sessions that after a lifetime of trying, I finally had a book hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list. So this hardworking author, after years of trying, really finally reached his goal. So he continues, "This made me really happy for about 10 minutes. And, you know, as sad as it sounds, it's also very, very human. Just, you know, we just don't get to be satisfied for that long before the greed or restlessness or aversion finds another target. Jim Carrey, the American author, has once said, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that it's not the answer." So somebody who really got rich and famous and got everything they ever dreamed of is telling me that it wasn't the answer. And you know, this might sound kind of clear when we are talking about having goals such as, you know, being rich or famous or having a mansion on the beach or something. But if we think of our meditation practice, it can get more subtle and more difficult to see what's going on. So, for instance, we could be, you know, without realizing it, be actually involved in a self-improvement project of some sort, you know, because we feel aversion to the one who's here and we feel greedy for a better version of ourselves. Or we might be aversive to our experience and greedy for some better experience and not necessarily realizing that. And the problem here is that there's really no end to these improvement projects. You know, some years ago, I had this insight, you know, like oftentimes, you know, walking on the street, walking in the city, I would encounter, you know, these construction projects. Maybe some building was being fixed or a new building was being built, or they would be tearing apart the road to fix the plumbing under the road or something. So construction projects of all sorts coming my way. And I wasn't really actively thinking about this, but there had been, you know, this kind of background thinking going on in those cases, kind of thinking that, oh, I hope they are going to get this done soon so that the city will be so much nicer when it's going to be ready, when they are going to get this project done. And you know, this was going on probably over many, many years from the background somehow, until, you know, one day walking by the construction project, yet another one, kind of thinking similar things. I wish they got this fixed soon, that the city would be nicer. I realized all of a sudden that, wow, it's never gonna be ready. You know, it's never gonna be ready. Okay, they are probably gonna get this one project done, but there's always gonna be another one. something else is always going to break down and it needs to be fixed, or else they want to build something new and nice. And at the same moment, I realized that it also applies to my inner projects and probably all of our inner projects too, that it's just like, it's never going to be ready. Like one project might get ready, but there's always going to be the next one, next one, and the next one, and the next one. So do we really want to be trapped by that and spend all of our life chasing after something or the other, internally or externally? And isn't it actually quite a violent way of relating to ourselves and to our experience, like not kind of being aversive to this one here or this experience here, and wanting to replace it by something better, not very friendly, not very kind, not very nice way of relating. And I wanted to illustrate here possibility of a different way of relating to our experience by reading you a poem. Poems are great in this way. So this poem is by Oriya Mountain Dreamer, and it's called Prelude. What if it truly doesn't matter what you do, but how you do whatever you do? How would this change what you choose to do with your life? What if you could be more present and open-hearted with each person you encounter, working as a cashier in the corner store, the parking lot attendant, or filing clerk? Then you could, if you were striving to do something you think is more important. How would this change how you want to spend your precious time on this earth? What if your contribution to the world and the fulfillment of your happiness is not dependent upon discovering a better method of prayer or technique of meditation? Not dependent upon reading the right book or attending the right seminar, but upon really seeing and deeply appreciating yourself and the world as they are right now. How would this affect your search for spiritual development? What if there is no need to change? No need to try and transform yourself into someone who is more compassionate, more present, more loving, or wise. How would this affect all the places in your life where you are endlessly trying to be better? What if the task is simply to unfold, to become who you already are, in your essential nature, gentle, compassionate, and capable of living fully and passionately present? How would this affect how you feel when you wake up in the morning? What if who you essentially are right now is all that you are ever going to be? How would this affect how you feel about your future? What if the essence of who you are and always have been is enough? How would this affect how you see and feel about your past? What if the question is not, why am I so infrequently the person I really want to be? But why do I so infrequently want to be the person I really am? How would this change what you think you have to learn? What if becoming who and what we truly are happens not through striving and trying, but by recognizing and receiving the people and places and practices that offer us the warmth of encouragement we need to unfold? How would this shape the choices you have to make about how to spend today? What if you knew that the impulse to move in a way that creates beauty in the world will arise from deep within and guide you every time you simply pay attention and wait? How would this shape your stillness, your movement, your willingness to follow this impulse, to just let go and dance? So would it be possible? Could we even try to imagine the possibility that this very moment here, could it be an end to itself instead of being some sort of a tool or a springboard to get to some better place at some point in the future? You know, if we think about it, like if we compare ourselves to some kings and queens in the medieval times, well, you know, I don't know the details how they lived, but I imagine that our quality of living might be higher than theirs, because you know we have probably all of us has good housing, warm housing. We have clothes to protect ourselves from every kind of weather. We have clean water and endless supply of that. We have a warm shower. We have enough food. We have lots of different kinds of medicines, much more than they had back in the day. So actually our basic needs are met pretty well already, but because it's true for almost everybody, we don't really even see it and are sometimes unable to appreciate that. And you know, it's summer too, with nature in a really beautiful state, and at least here in Helsinki, the sun is shining in a beautiful way. So when exactly are we gonna be present and satisfied, if not now? When is that moment going to be? Like Greg talked about, could we be the human being instead of the human doing? It's kind of tricky. We talk about doing meditation, but doing would actually really get in the way if we think about it this way. And I hadn't been practicing for very long before I encountered the book that really, really drew me. And it was a book called Doing Nothing, Coming to the End of the Spiritual Search, written by Stephen Harrison. And if I read you an excerpt from the back cover of that Doing Nothing book: this book is for those who have found themselves religiously following practices that have not fundamentally changed their lives. New therapies, ancient meditations, exotic religions, or old-time religion. It encourages them to find the truths of life through the simple act of stopping the search. What do you do after you've tried everything to find enlightenment or happiness? do nothing, writes Stephen Harrison. As it turns out, nothing is a surprisingly active place, but it is here that we discover who and what we are. So Stephen Harrison, the author of that book, if I just summarize briefly, he had been doing all kinds of spiritual practices, including meditation, for many, many years, but he was feeling frustrated because he had been looking for something and he felt that he hadn't found what he had been looking for. So one day he met with yet another guru to ask for advice, and this particular guru gave him like really, really groundbreaking advice for him, life-changing advice for him. And the guru's advice was, stop doing, do nothing. And what happened to Steve Harrison when he stopped trying paradoxically, he realized that he found what he had been looking for the entire time. When he stopped searching, he found what he had been looking for the entire time. And it was obviously so big for him that he even ended up writing this book about the topic. And I could share his practice instruction with you in case you might want to try it out. And it's not too long. So his practice instruction is, go to a room and do nothing. That's it. That was that for him. And you know, this doing nothing has been an important practice for me for years. You know, having a personality that's like very oriented towards, you know, doing and achieving, and the entire, you know, this whole conditioning of society, you know, to make us really future oriented, goal oriented, like we are here to work on some projects, to achieve some goals and to improve ourselves. All this together has really needed some balancing out with the doing nothing. And interestingly enough, doing nothing is not quite as easy as it sounds. I mean, it might be very easy for some people, but for some of us, it's anything but easy. Like meditation might be so much easier, even months of meditation, because in meditation, we often have a sense that we are doing something and getting somewhere. But if we stop all doing and trying and searching, then we are really faced with a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that we might not have been faced with before. So if it resonates with you, feel free to go and give it a try. This retreat is a great, great place to go and give it a try. Like one of the sitting meditations we have, you could try sitting down and doing nothing, doing absolutely nothing, trying absolutely nothing, just sitting there and seeing, just like not even seeing what happens, just like sitting there with no goal, no trying, no efforting. Or, you know, you could take a walking meditation period and take a cup of tea and go sit down somewhere and do nothing and try nothing. And I just want to clarify that this might not be the right practice for everybody, because we are so different and different places. For somebody, a better practice might be to, you know, develop some more self-discipline and putting in some more effort in one's practice and more determination. That might be the right way to go for somebody. But for some of us, you know, the direction of doing less and less, even nothing, might be the right way to go. And I do remember from one of my early long retreats that I got the instruction from the teachers. I think Greg was one of the teachers on that particular retreat, to take one meditation period per day and, you know, take a cup of tea and you know, sit down somewhere and do nothing. And what happened to me was that I actually had the most mindfulness during that doing nothing time compared to all the formal meditation periods I was doing. So it was quite incredible, the effect that I had. And I realized at that point that what I had been doing in my formal meditation was way too much. It's kind of like what I had been doing I had been trying to turn on the lights. I was, you know, really busy flipping the light switch, trying to turn on the lights. Then the lights were actually on all the time. They were on already, but I was just way too busy with the light switch to even notice the lights were on already. So we have been talking about doing, and we have been talking about kind of future orientation, goal orientation that might come in the way of just, you know, simply being there without the presence of any development projects. But there's another thing that might come in the way, and that is the idea of usefulness. And I'm sure this doesn't apply to everybody, but it might apply to some of you. It certainly applies to me, that there might be this habit of thinking that whatever we do, it needs to be useful in some way. Like whatever we do, it needs to be useful. Like we even might rest and relax because it's good for us, because it's useful to rest and relax, you know. And we try to be mindful and do these retreats because they are useful, clearly. Even science shows that they are useful. But if we stop and think about what does useful even mean, what does it point to? There might be many different opinions of that, but at the end, it's just another concept that's, you know, there's no substance there, there's no nothing tangible there. It's just very insubstantial concept, like any other thought, but yet it can really govern our lives to a big extent. You know, if our life is run by this usefulness concept of usefulness, and if we are being present, and if nothing particularly useful seems to be happening, you know, what might result is, you know, restlessness, aversion, greed. So all those root defilements causing suffering. So if you feel that this might resonate with you, might want to pay a little attention to that and see if you could try, at least try for a moment to let go of that need for usefulness. What might be revealed if the need for usefulness wasn't there for a while? Because, you know, we can practice perfectly well and live perfectly well many times without even remembering that concept. And maybe kind of just to sum up, I could share with you a story. Like when I started out Vipassana meditation, I went to a beginner's class, insight meditation beginner's class, 6 weeks. I was studying in the States at the time, and it was a beginner's class taught by Rodney Smith, who was a guiding teacher of the Seattle Insight Meditation Society. And in the very first class of the beginner's class, very first meeting, he had everybody, like everybody had a piece of paper and a pen, and he had everybody write down a list of things that they wanted out of the meditation practice. Like, why are you here wanting to learn meditation? What do you want to get? And everybody happily wrote a list of things that they wanted to get out of the meditation. Okay, when everybody was ready, then Rodney said that, now take your pen and paper and cross everything over, you know, a big cross over everything. You know, none of that is the point. None of that is the point of what we are doing here. I mean, they might obviously be very nice and good things, but they are not really truly the point. The point is something beyond these lists and goals and achievements and projects. And I do feel personally when I think back that the truly valuable things that I've got out of the practice are things that I didn't even know to want, like things that I couldn't even imagine necessarily. So I either couldn't even have been greed for those because I didn't know they were there. So if you're able to let go of these smaller projects, more space could open up for something beyond them, and those smaller things could kind of come as a side effect of everything else. So I wanted to end this talk by reading another poem. This one is by Dana Ault. It only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still. And just like that, something in me settles, softens, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper. And I remember again that life isn't a relay race, that we will all cross the finish line, that waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as I forget, catch myself charging forward without even knowing where I'm going, that many times I can make the choice to stop, to breathe and be, and walk slowly into the mystery. So now I'd like to invite you to try all this out in practice with me for the remaining 10 minutes of the session, to try this out in practice. So finding a suitable posture for yourself for some sitting. Taking a few deep breaths and letting the body and the mind relax a bit, soften a bit. Finding your anchor. being aware of the changing sensations of the anger. Being aware of the wider field of experience too. Noticing if there are any beliefs or views in the mind related to what you want to achieve by meditation. Perhaps some experience, or perhaps some insight, perhaps some self-improvement project. And if you find a belief or view like that, just out of experiment, just for a moment, gently letting it go, seeing what happens if you let go. No need to achieve anything. What would that feel like? Just noticing if there are any beliefs or views in the mind related to how your experience, this experience here, how should it look like? How should it look right now? What should it be like right now? Like, should you feel more concentrated or more kind, or should the experience be more subtle, or anything else like that? And if you notice any beliefs about how the experience should look like, just out of experiment, just for a moment, trying to let go. What if it truly didn't matter what the experience looked like? And just noticing if there happens to be any wanting there, for this moment or this experience to be useful in some way, or for this practice to be useful in some way. If you notice anything like that, just out of experiment, letting go of that for a moment. What would it feel like if it didn't need to be useful? It really wouldn't matter if it's useful or not. And then, out of experiment, just for a moment, imagining what would it feel like if this experience here, this very experience right here, was enough and there was no problem whatsoever with it. Like, what if there was absolutely no need to get rid of anything or to change anything or to add anything? Can you imagine what it would feel like if this experience here truly was enough?